A new season for the Bruins. Can they become one of Boston's premier sports teams again? And the Celtics start their preseason. It should be an interesting one. Two teams fighting for attention in a Red Sox-Patriots crazed market. It's Wednesday, October 4th, 2017. I'm Chris Gasper, and this is Season Ticket. Welcome to Season Ticket from the Boston Globe Sports Department and WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. We're here with you every weekday. We're joined today by Kevin Paul DuPont, senior NHL writer for the Boston Globe, also a sports columnist for the Globe. Kevin, welcome to Season Ticket.
Chris,
great to have you.
It's great to be here in the post-Malcolm Subban era.
That's right. Yeah, Malcolm Subban, now a member of the Vegas Golden Knights. So we want to talk to you, obviously, about the Bruins. Their season starts on Thursday, and the complexion of this team has changed quite a bit. There's a lot of young faces. There's a lot of inexperienced faces from a team that made the playoffs last year with 95 points. What can Bruins fans expect from this team and the direction of the team in terms of integrating all these young players?
Well, the first thing is the kids, of course. I mean, they're going to have Anders Bjork up front on the first line. They're going to have Louis DeBrusque's kid on the second line. And they've got the BU kid, Charlie McAvoy, who could be a, I'm not going to say generational player, but he certainly could be a number one defenseman and sort of a different number one defenseman than we're used to. You've got to go back to the Ray Bourque era to pick that guy. So it's interesting. I mean, beyond the kids and the new faces, it always happen, and there's other new faces as well, some a little more familiar in terms of like Sean Corrali and maybe Austin Zarnik when he gets off the IR and stuff. It's also going to be a different model, different play. They're going to try to adapt to the current NHL model, because it changes every 3 to 5 years, which is speed, speed, and more speed.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that has to do, obviously, with the rules opening up, and you look at a team like the Pittsburgh Penguins, they're the two-time defending Stanley Cup champions. There's more of an emphasis on speed and skill in the NHL, and it seems like the Bruins were maybe a little bit slower than some other teams to adjust to this. Obviously, they won a Stanley Cup in 2011, competed for another one in 2013, losing in the finals in 6 games to the Blackhawks. But this is really the vision of the team that general manager Don Sweeney has, right? This is the first time it's really going to match, or at least they're going to attempt to match, what Don Sweeney wants to do, which is integrate these young players and play a little bit more up-tempo.
Yeah, if you remember, it seems a long time ago now, but really wasn't, that they won in 2011, but 6 years later. They won with some intimidation. They won with Lucic and Nathan Horton until he got hurt. They were a big, broad team, not in the style that we grew up in here in the 60s and 70s with big, bad Bruins, but they still were intimidating people with strength and power, and they played that way, and they played very defensively as well. Well, they don't have the personnel anymore. They've moved the personnel. They are going to the current template, which is speed, and they're not calling it a transitional year, but the truth of it is that's what it is, because they're washing out what they were, and they're bringing in some speed, and it's all well and good to say it. It still has to win, right?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Let's talk about some of these young guys that you mentioned and let people know a little bit more about them. I want to start with Charlie McAvoy, the defenseman, because we've seen him at the NHL level. We saw him in the Ottawa Senators series. The Bruins eliminated in 6 games in that series. You had 6 one-goal games, and you had 4 goals that went into overtime. Charlie McAvoy got a lot of ice time, and a lot of people got really excited, but it's a small sample size. From what you've seen, are the expectations for Charlie McAvoy maybe out of whack? I mean, people are talking about a number one defenseman. They're comparing him to a guy like Los Angeles Kings defenseman Drew Doughty, who's one of the best defensemen in the NHL.
Right, right. And some of that is just body style and sort of thickness of trunk, style of game too, certainly. If we wanted to roll the calendar back, I think the last time we saw something like this in terms of numbers, it was 20 years ago when they brought in Thornton, Samsonov, Gill, P.J. Axelson. Of course, the latter two weren't as ballyhooed as the top two because those were first-round picks. So it's similar in that, I think, in Thornton and in Charlie, in that high-profile, first-round picks, and people are taught this great buzz. But let's not forget what it was with Thornton. It took a few years. So what are you looking at? Now, Thornton was 18. This kid's 20. Oh, he's 19 at the moment. It will be 20. You're a little more finished product at 20, as Joe was. These kids have a much greater sense of the world. 20 years later, they come in much better conditioned. I would say the greater challenge for Charlie versus Joe's youth, the Utes, is that he's better conditioned. The question being, Can he go from the college schedule of 30 games and grind it through the 82 games? And that is a big, big change for these kids.
And when you look at the Bruins team last year, it seems like offense at times was hard to come by.
Yep.
They were exceedingly reliant on a couple of players, guys like Patrice Bergeron, Brad Marchand, David Pastrnak. Patrice Bergeron came on, I think, in the second half of the season, but he was fighting through that hernia. I think the idea this year is to be a little more balanced offensively,
sure.
And they are counting on Jake DeBrusk and Anders Bjork to be able to do that. Now, Anders Bjork will ride on the line with Bergeron and Marchand. It seems like almost anybody on that line in the past has had some success. He's coming from Notre Dame, straight from college hockey. How ready is he?
Same thing. I mean, he's going to have to adapt, right? He's going to have to get used to playing every other night and doing that for 6 months against men. He's still, I would say, toward the kid's body. So they've got to add, this is all of them now, they've got to add some bulk and width and deal with the stamina of it. It's strictly a stamina thing. Bjork is a different animal in that he's extremely fast. I don't know if I've seen anyone as fast here.
Bergeron to Bjork, he scores!
This is a kid who does have game-breaking speed, and they haven't had that. Now, he's got to integrate with guys that are quick, but they're not that. So I've also seen young kids come in. Kid that comes to mind is Russ Cortinel of Toronto. Had blazing speed. Nobody could keep up with it, so it becomes almost a useless skill. There are guys who play really fast, and every other skill breaks down. That's not the case with this kid. So he's going to, I would say, in the bigger context, the eye candy element of Bjork playing with this top line, and they run a risk here because the top line worked with Pastrnak up there. So it is a classic case of what you're talking about, trying to redistribute the offense and seeing if they can get two-line offense.
It's pretty funny. There's a lot of talk in this town about, you know, 40-year-old athletes, and we always talk about Tom Brady. But what about Zdeno Chara on defense for the Bruins? How much is left in the tank? Because it seems like the last couple of seasons, when we get towards the end of the year, Chara doesn't look like he has the same stamina, the same skating ability, and he gets worn down. I think that showed up a little bit in that playoff series against the Senators.
Yes, true, but he is a horse because look who he was paired with. He was paired with Brandon Carlo, and that did give him a jump. But when it came to crunch time, who was out of the lineup? Brandon Carlo. That's not to say a guy's concussion you can hold against him, but one thing about Chara is he's big, he's conditioned, he's durable, and sure, does he play at age 40? Is he playing like a 30-year? No, but he is still a very valuable asset to them because of his experience and his knowledge and his reach. If you go back, again, this is a long time now, Brad Park played on one leg. He played on intelligence, you know, for his last 3 to 4 years here. That's where Chara is at an older level, but takes great care of himself, great leader in terms of on-ice presence, teaching kids. So I'd say he's here for, even though the contract runs out this year, I think you'll see him play a couple of years.
And as a quick aside, can you tell folks how many languages does Zdeno speak?
I think he speaks 5 or 6, yeah. I know in his downtime, just for the heck of it, he learned Swedish 1 year.
Yeah, I've spoken with Zdeno. I think his English is better than my English, to be honest with you. It's pretty amazing. He's a very intelligent guy. So leading these baby bees is Bruce Cassidy, who took over for Claude Julien last year. And Cassidy did really well, 18-8-1. A lot of people gave him credit for them making the playoffs. Yep. Now he gets to run this team from the beginning. What will it look like?
Well, the vision is youth. What will it look like? It's going to, in many ways, it's going to be the same because the core group, as we speak today, on the eve of the start of the play, the start of the regular season, it's a fast season. It's not that
the Jacobs
fast.
Are saying it's the start of the playoffs.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, the Jacobs family, which owns the Bruins.
Yeah, I don't think there's going to be anything too dramatic. It could be in the sense that the kids get to a higher plane faster than you would expect. And that said, I would caution people, if that's the case, if in October and November they're flying high off of these three kids, it's common to expect a turn down around Christmas time when the college schedule kind of clicks in. But to your point early in the intro, can they get back to being a prominent team in town?
Yes.
Well, one thing about the Bruins is, and this was even leading into their cup year, if what you're measuring them is off gait and success in terms of money, they've been there for quite a while, and that's one thing about the crowd. In the Jacobs world, if you build it, they will drink. It's a big, big spending crowd.
Yeah, I think maybe it's a little more about getting sort of the casual Boston sports fan. People always
Absolutely.
Ask me, you know, what kind of sports town is Boston? And I always say it's a winner's town. Whichever team has a chance to win a championship, that's
right.
That's
and I think if the trend in Foxborough is what we're seeing here at the moment, We could see that get tested again. People forget they only had 20,000 people in the stands before the, you know, the current mecca that was built. And frankly, I think it's the dollar dynamic that drives that. It's you just can't go for a buck or two anymore. If you're in, you're all in. And if you're all in, you want it to be a good product.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us, Kevin.
You
this
bet.
Was great. Had a lot of fun. That's Kevin Paul DuPont. He is in the Hockey Hall of Fame. You're not going to find a better hockey writer. You actually won't find a better writer at the Globe. So no, he's fantastic. Kevin, thanks for joining us. We really appreciate it. And the Bruins are going to open the season on Thursday, October 5th, against the Nashville Predators down in Nashville. All right, coming up, we'll switch things over to Celtics. We'll be joined by Chad Finn. You're definitely going to want to listen to his thoughts about the Celtics. We'll be back in a minute on Season Ticket. We're back on Season Ticket, and the Celtics start a new season with a new team. There are 11 new players on this team from last year when you look at a team that was the number one seed in the East. The headliner of the new guys is Kyrie Irving, who came over in a huge trade that sent fan favorite Isaiah Thomas to the Cleveland Cavaliers. Kyrie Irving and Gordon Hayward, the headliners for this team. I'm now joined by Chad Finn, Boston Globe online sports columnist. Chad, you look at this Celtics team, and it's entirely different from a team that was the number one seed in the East and that a lot of fans here had really fallen in love with.
Yeah.
How long do you think it will take them to embrace Kyrie Irving?
I don't know, Chris. There's sort of a perception that it's going to take them a while to gel. Kyrie Irving is a dominant all-star type of player. Gordon Hayward is a dominant all-star type of player, but they haven't played together yet. Their first preseason game was Monday night, and they have some kinks to work out. So it might take a while, but I tend to think it's gonna happen quicker than people realize. When the Celtics got Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce, Ray Allen together in 2007, 2008, completely remodeled that team. They were great out of the gate. There may be a hiccup here, but there's much more talent on this team than they had last year. That talent is going to maybe help them overcome some of their unfamiliarity with each other in the beginning. And once they get familiar with each other, they're going to be an explosive offense.
I think the entire subtext of this season is Kyrie Irving versus LeBron James, at least in the Eastern Conference. Kyrie Irving was a teammate of LeBron James with the Cleveland Cavaliers. They went to three straight NBA finals. They won one championship, the first championship in the city of Cleveland since 1964. And people still don't really understand why Kyrie wanted out of that situation. And he hasn't done the greatest job explaining it.
Even if, like, that's what I'm saying, Jeff, like, even if there are things, like, it's not anybody else's business. It's just really between two men. So that's really where it is.
I think this is going to be intrigue all year long, and it's going to be like these two teams watching each other sort of from across the room all year long.
Yeah, on paper, too, they're the two best teams in the East. They met in the East Finals last year. So there is automatically that intrigue, even without the trade that sent Isaiah Thomas there. Brings Kyrie here, two of the best guards in the league. He's an enigmatic guy, sort of. I remember, you know, we covered the Eastern Conference Finals when Kyrie was the Cavaliers. Incredibly well-spoken, articulate guy, and yet he seems to try to go out of his way to be mysterious or something like that. You know what I mean?
A lot of his comments are very sort of ambiguous.
He's got to do it on purpose because when he's talking thoughtfully about a subject, he's fantastic. So I think he likes that perception that there's a little bit of mystery to him. And I think the obvious answer to why he wanted to get away from LeBron is he's 25 years old. This is a guy who 2 years ago hit the winning shot on the road in Game 7 of the finals against the 73-win team to win the championship. He's an accomplished player, incredibly talented player. He's like the little brother who wants to get out of his big brother's shadow and go out and find out what he can do on his own. He just happens to be doing it with their rival.
Yeah, it's interesting because you wouldn't normally have two teams make a deal like this, two rivals, the top two teams trading with each other, because there's a lot of risk there. And I think there's also risk in Kyrie's decision. I'm going to be honest with you. Kyrie Irving's my favorite player in the NBA.
Is he really?
I love watching him play. I mean, I think, you know, what he can do to finish around the rim, I think he's an artiste in the air. He can do things that no one else in the league at his size can do. But there's some risk here for Kyrie because he has to come here now and deliver. Not only is he separating himself from LeBron James, a generational talent, someone that people compare to Michael Jordan, but he's replacing Isaiah Thomas. And Isaiah Thomas was the focal point of the renaissance of the Celtics.
Beloved guy, too.
Beloved guy by the fans. And so the expectations for Kyrie Irving are sky high, and that's a lot of pressure on him. Now, he can share some of that with Hayward, but I think it's pretty clear right away that Gordon Hayward, who came in as a free agent here, free agent forward, played for Brad Stevens, the Celtics coach in college at Butler, he was sort of the marquee guy. Mm-hmm. But now it's Kyrie, and I think it's clear that Kyrie's the headliner here. He is the franchise player, and with that comes a tremendous amount of pressure and expectations. And I'm curious if he's up to it.
Well, I like the guy who's seeking out that pressure and expectation. You can't take too much, really anything concrete away from one preseason game, but you can take clues. And the clue that we got from that first preseason game was Kyrie Irving's going to move the basketball. That's been something that's been an issue with him. A little bit of a ball hog. You can understand why. He's a fantastic talent. But the Celtics are predicated on sharing the basketball, getting good shots for everybody. Brad Stevens has a real knack for getting through to any player of any sort of mindset, skill level, ability. It's one of his real talents as a coach. I think that will happen with Kyrie. And I think Kyrie is bright enough, because he is a smart guy, to recognize this is what I need to do to be at my best. I think they're going to unlock things with Kyrie Irving that we didn't see in Cleveland, where his coaching may not have been on the top level most of the time during his time there.
Yeah, I agree with you on that, Chad. When you look at Isaiah Thomas's success, not to take anything away from him, but I thought that Brad Stevens did a great job of putting him in a position to be successful and creating opportunities
right.
for him, you know, off the pick and roll, off the ball, doing stuff like that. I think he can do the same and enhance Kyrie Irving. And you're absolutely right about the fact that Kyrie Irving's never really played for an offensive mastermind like Brad Stevens. We had Mike Brown as one of his head coaches, who I remember in the huddle, you know, when they had to draw up a play, Mike Brown would stand off to the side and let an assistant drop.
Or LeBron.
Or LeBron. I mean, let's be honest. Basically, for his career, you know, he's had Mike Brown as a coach. He's had LeBron as a coach. LeBron as a general manager. LeBron as a teammate. LeBron as a big brother. I think you guys get the point. LeBron's been a huge influence. He wants to get out of that shadow. But I think there's a lot more there with Kyrie Irving. You mentioned he's 25 years old. He's a former number one pick. Last year, he averaged a career-high 25.2 points per game. But I still think he's an ascending player.
I do, too.
I still don't think we've seen the best of Kyrie Irving. And I think that's one of the reasons the Celtics made this trade. There was some debate here whether this was just a lateral move. And right now, I can see where you'd argue that. But I think Kyrie Irving's upside is higher than Isaiah Thomas's upside. And I think overall, this Celtics team's upside is higher than the Celtics team that they had, that everybody loved, that was the number one seed last year.
I'm with you. It wouldn't shock me if Kyrie Irving won the scoring title this year and still played relatively selfless basketball within the Celtics scheme.
No Celtics has ever won the scoring
title. Is that
title.
True?
Yeah, no Celtics has ever led the NBA in scoring.
Isaiah thinks he won it last year, I think.
I know he does. I did want to ask you here, we talked so much about Kyrie and Gordon Hayward and Al Horford, who was on the team last year, but I also think this team's fate will be determined by the role players, and they're asking two young players, Jaylen Brown, a swing man who's in his second year, and Jason Tatum, another swing man who is a rookie, the number three overall pick, to play major roles for them. How do you see that playing out with Tatum and Brown? Can they rely on those guys?
I'm not so certain on Tatum right away. He's getting rave reviews as a kid they took with the third pick in
He's
the draft.
Paul Pierce comparison.
He is, and from veteran guys who you respect what they say, Al Horford is talking about him like he's going to be a really important player right away. But you saw him get pushed around in summer league a little bit. He's playing against the adults now. He's going to have nights where he looks like a kid. He's also going to have nights where he scores 15 points in 12 minutes.
Thanks, Chad. I appreciate it. I'm sorry we didn't have time to get into your exploits. A lot of people here don't know that you're a knockdown shooter in the Globe Pickup League. So maybe we can talk about that next time.
I was back when I had two good eyes.
Thanks, Chad.
Thanks, Chris.
Finally, a segment we call the cheap seats, and this is pretty cheap. Ads, by their nature, are supposed to be conspicuous, but the NBA has put ads on their jerseys this year, patches, and they're saying they'll be inconspicuous. Well, they certainly were not on Monday night, as the Celtics had a GE ad patch on their uniform. I was not a fan. I think turning basketball players into walking billboards is a bad idea. And that's it for this edition of Season Ticket. If you liked this, be sure to tell a friend and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher. To learn more about this show, go to wbur.org/seasonticket. And for more great sports stories, subscribe to the Boston Globe. I'm Chris Gasper. We'll see you tomorrow.